Good morning.
Good morning.
Today's scripture is from Luke chapter 6, verses 37 to 42. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back. He also told them a parable. Can a blind person guide a blind person? Will both not fall into a pit? A disciple is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully qualified will be like the teacher. Why do you see the speck in your neighbor's eye, but do not notice the log in your own eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, friend, let me take the speck in your eye out, when you yourself do not see the log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. A word from our Holy Scripture.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks, John. Gosh, almost sounds like it's coming from God himself or herself when John says it. Do not judge or you will be judged. Yikes. I am not what I would consider a disciplined person. I wouldn't look like this if I were really disciplined. I'm disciplined in a few areas, but I'm not disciplined in a lot of areas. And I have a lot of respect and admiration for those who are really, really disciplined in their lives. But I am coming to realize that there is a large gap between discipline and motivation. It's easy for me to do the things that I am motivated to do, that I get something out of, that I love doing. I will do those things easily because I'm motivated. I like to do them. Discipline, though, is another story. Discipline is doing the things that you don't like to do because they need to get done. And I'm learning about discipline as I get older, because if I don't do some things as I get older, I am creaky when I get up in the morning. We have to discipline ourselves around all kinds of things. Otherwise, things don't get done. We all know that. What I also have begun to realize is the people that I admire, because they are really disciplined, aren't completely disciplined in all areas. We all have areas where we are disciplined, and we all have areas where we aren't. But I wonder if you'd ever thought that stewardship should be a discipline. That we should discipline ourselves to practice good stewardship. It just makes sense, because when we look after things, when we discipline ourselves to do those things, we feel better. Things are taken care of. Whether it's looking after ourselves, looking after our homes, looking after other people, or looking after the earth, creation. I think we're losing that sense of discipline in our lives. We're losing that sense of caring for things. And perhaps we need to be a little more disciplined. But perhaps also we need a little encouragement to do so, or a reframing of perhaps even why we should do so. So I thought I'd sort of share with you three illustrations today that might suggest to us why we should be disciplined around stewardship. So this is number one. Imagine that Gail has this fantastic three-bedroom condo in Hawaii. That is spectacular, right on the beach, all decked out, nicest furniture, everything in the kitchen you could imagine. And along with this three-bedroom condo that she has in Hawaii, she also has a nice, sporty little red Porsche convertible that goes with it. Can you imagine that? And imagine she says to you, Daniel, no, not Daniel. Forget Daniel. He can go anytime. It's hers, right? He could go visit that. Imagine he says to Paul and Pat over here, or she says, I really like you. And I want to send you for 2 weeks to Hawaii to enjoy my three-bedroom condo on the ocean with a Porsche and everything. Everything comes with it. I'm going to send you down, and you're going to have the run of the place. Whatever you want, use it. It's all yours to use. What a nice gift, eh? But what would we expect of the guests? What would we expect that the guests would do if they were down there? What would you do?
I guess what we would do would be probably give quite a significant gift, or at least try to pay them something for it, for sure. You would be not make sure that it was left in pristine condition
right. When
you left. You would probably send a huge thank you for all of the blessings you've received,
right.
And try to return the favor in some way, even if it was difficult to do.
Would you enjoy it? Would you enjoy it?
Oh, we would enjoy it, absolutely.
Great. They're coming over, Gail, is it? Yeah. So, yeah, if you were given that kind of gift, first of all, you'd go down and take great pleasure in it. What an amazing blessing you had received, right? Great pleasure in the gift that you had been given and the generosity you had been afforded by Gail. But you would make sure that you take care of it. You don't trash it. You leave it in the same or even better condition than you found it because you recognize the gift. And as you're planning to return home, quite often, because you are so overwhelmed with the gift and the pleasure you took in it, you do return at least a big thank you. But most of us would give a host gift in return for what we had gotten. And not a cheap bottle of wine, right? For the quality that you had received, a dinner out, a certificate, a nice bottle of wine, and a gift card, right? What if we could imagine that this earth that we had been given, the gifts we had been given in our lives, this home that we have and all the resources that we have are like that. That God gives us everything out of God's pleasure, right? You have the gift to give, so you give it to people. But what if the expectation also was that you looked after it really well, that you disciplined yourself enough to not trash the place, not take advantage of the giver, not waste the gift you had been given, really enjoy it, and then give back something? You're not going to give back what it's worth, then it's not a gift, but you are going to show your appreciation for what has been given. The scripture this morning says, by the way, this is from the Gospel of Luke. It is a second version of the Sermon on the Mount you find in Matthew. And it's little sayings of Jesus. They don't quite fit together. So the passage didn't quite fit together. It's three sort of little passages. But it says, if I have the right one. To give back, give and it will be given to you. A good measure pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. This is the scripture, actually my dad's favorite scripture. He believed this. For the measure you give, it will be given to you. God has given us so much. The measure you give of what you have been given will be given back to you. You know when you have a jar of something, nails, rice, anything like that, and you have just a little bit more than will fit in the jar, you know what you have to do? You have to shake it a bit till it settles down, and then you can put in the rest. That's what this image is. A good measure, shaken, will receive more. And the more you give, the more space there is as well for you to receive. I had a lesson in this just this weekend. I was away at another church doing a retreat for them, for their boards, and I was hosted overnight by a woman on the board. I had never met her before, didn't know who she was, but when I went back to her home, her lovely home that night, and she's an avid quilter. I mean, avid quilter. She has a room bigger than my house to do her quilting in, basically, or bigger than my upstairs anyway. And I love color, and I love quilts. I think they're a fine art. And so I was just delighted to see all these magnificent, colorful quilts. And the next morning, she handed me one. She gave me a quilt. I was blown away by that generosity. The whole board the next morning said that's who she is, but she receives back. She's grateful. So what she gives, she knows she receives. Okay, another illustration. Let me share with you something else. Let's say Donna, since you're just up here. Donna is blessed beyond measure to be gifted with a beautiful baby girl. So I don't know if that's a gift to her. She said, as long as she doesn't have to give birth. She said, happened to Sarah. Okay, so Donna is gifted with this beautiful baby girl, this perfect, healthy, beautiful baby girl. And she wants to do her best by it. What would you do to care for, attend to this child? Anybody? What do you do? Don't ask me. I don't have a child. Okay.
You love it?
You love it. First thing you do is you love it, right? What else?
You care for it.
Care for it. In what way?
In every way.
Food, clothing, love, warmth, supplies. Right. Okay. What else?
An education.
Say that again.
An education.
Education. Education. You give them the tools that they need, right? You teach them. What else? Bring it to church. Give it community, some values, faith. What else? Safety. Yeah, of course you provide safety for that child, for that container for that child to grow up. Do you give of them your resources, right? And what do you hope of that child? What is your hopes for that child?
They'll grow up to be caring and loving and morally ethical, giving.
Yeah. Sorry, but you say that again.
I don't think I can remember it all. You want them to be helpful and giving and loving and have a moral compass and just be productive and helpful and caring.
Right. Okay. So there are expectations for that child, right? You give them everything you can. You give them education. You give them resources. You give them what you have to teach, and you offer opportunities for them to learn. And then you hope that they grow up to be productive, contributing people in society. That's what we do. What if we imagine God like that? That God gave us all of these things, all of these abilities, all of these gifts, all of this knowledge, all of this community, and then expected us to be responsible, giving, caring, productive people in society. Happiness. Happy. Yeah, happy, joyful, yeah. Elizabeth wants to add, we want them to be happy, joyful. Of course you want your kids to have that, right? By the way, just as an aside, children do not owe their parents anything. They're made up. What? Children never choose to come into the world. Parents choose to bring children into the world. Therefore, parents give to their children. Children owe nothing to their parents. Well, and Joyce said, yeah, and so parents can choose to take them out. If, however, the relationship is loving and caring and mutual, you will always give back in a loving relationship, right? Same with God. We don't owe God anything. God has put us here. God has given this resource, these resources, and the expectation is that we would grow and become productive, happy, giving human beings. I hear too often parents say, "Oh, my kids don't call me, and my kids don't do anything. My kids, blah 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 blah." They will if there's love in the relationship. It's mutual. It's caring. We don't owe God anything, but we will give to God because we are loved. That's how it works. We do not give out of guilt or fear. That's not the relationship we want parents to have with their children, and that's not the relationship God has with us. We don't owe God anything. We give back to God because we are loved and have been given everything. Our scripture this morning says, "Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall in a pit if they're both blind?" I think one of the things that has happened in the church is we have not practiced enough discipline around stewardship to show the world that the world needs to be cared for better than it is being cared for. And if we can't set that tone, if we don't have that moral compass, if we are not disciplined around caring for creation and caring for each other and even tending to ourselves, how can we show the world how to do that? I think the church should be the best example in the world of a discipline, a stewardship around what we have been given, caring for what we have been given. Third example. Let's say Ed back here is coaching a baseball team. Now let's say he's coaching a rugby team. Ed is coaching a rugby team. What would be the coach's what would be the expectation of the coach as to what the coach gives to the team?
Leadership.
Leadership, number one, yes. What else? Sorry? An example. Sets an example. The coach sets an example. Guidance.
Guidance.
Guidance. Yep. Support. Sorry? Knowledge of the game. Mentoring. Enthusiasm. Encouragement. Skills. Tools. And what would he expect? What would you expect of your team? Sorry? Motivation, your team to be motivated? Respect? Give 100%. Put some skin in the game. What else, sorry? Commitment. Self-discipline. Respect. Would you expect them to win? Not always, but you're in the game for competition, right? So you do want them to win sometimes. And how do you expect them to function as a team? Together as a unit. What happens if one player works against the team? It's a disaster. The team won't work, right? If one's working against the whole team, it doesn't work. What if we imagined that we're the team that God puts here? God's the coach. Christ has been the coach, told us how to get in the game and how to work on the game, how to do it, given the skills and the tools and all that sort of stuff to look after the world. We're the team, and we all have to work together, together, to make this world a better place. And we can if we do it together. But when we're working against it, it doesn't work. We have been given these gifts to be disciplined like a team, to work to make it a better place. The last part of the scripture says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in someone else's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say, friend, and this is humor, Jesus is, you know, this is humor. He said, friend, let me take that little speck of sawdust out of your eye when you got a plank sticking out of your eye. Why would you do that? I think we're too good these days at blaming everything else in the world for the problems that we have, without taking responsibility for doing something about it ourselves. We have a responsibility. We might be walking around with the planks in our eyes. I mean, the church is blaming everything for its decline, blaming everything for why it's not working anymore for people to come to church, why the values are degrading and everything like that. But maybe we got a plank in our eye and we're not recognizing that we've bought into the culture's values instead of Christ's values, and disciplining ourselves spiritually to do what it takes to be an example to the world. We have been given this beautiful, magnificent place to live. It's a good thing. It's an amazing thing. And we're getting dragged down by the world. What if we could see it as a place where we have an opportunity to do something and care for it and tend to it and discipline ourselves in looking after it without blaming anybody else, but taking responsibility ourselves? Let's give it a try. We're going to spend some time now in reflection, quiet reflection and prayer. There are stations.